Good morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. The cartoon stereotype of psychoanalysis is set in a tastefully appointed room with an armchair from which a silver-haired gentleman peers over spectacles at a stylish patient on a couch. The whole scene conveys calm and affluence. Social workers are here to tell you that cartoon has little to do with real psychoanalysis in the real world today. Literally, here to tell you, the American Association for Psychoanalysis in Clinical Social Work is gathering in Baltimore this weekend. You may not know that most mental health care in the U.S. is provided by clinical social workers. Their theme this weekend is mind and milieu, from the consulting room to the community and back. The host committee wants their guests to know that Baltimore holds a special place in the history of psychoanalysis and is the perfect place to understand the complex give and take between our inner and outer worlds. Two of the host social workers are with me. Dan Buccino, assistant professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, is a clinical supervisor in the community psychiatry program at Bayview and director of the Johns Hopkins Civility Committee. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And Teresa Mendez, a social worker and former journalist, worked at the retreat at Shepherd Pratt and is now a therapist in private practice. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Clinical social workers are the primary deliverers of mental health care in the U.S. Dan Buccino, I did not know that. Walk me through that.
Well, I think there are probably more social workers than there are any other mental health profession. And since there are more of us walking around, we generally end up doing the bulk of the work. I think, as you said, 60% of mental health care services are probably provided by clinical social workers. And I think here in Maryland, over 80% of licensed social workers are clinical social workers.
So when we talk about that, tell me the various settings. It must be broader than I had conceived.
Yeah, I think the number of clinical social workers who actually work in full-time private practice is fairly small. We work in hospitals and schools for the military and for the VA. Psychosocial rehab programs in prisons and jails and homeless shelters. Clinical social workers are in just about any kind of setting you can think of.
Teresa Mendez, you now have a private practice as a therapist, but you've worked in other settings too. Paint a picture for me of what social workers do in psychoanalysis.
I would say the thing that defines a sort of psychoanalytic approach is the way you sort of conceive of what you're doing rather than necessarily the 5 day a week or the couch. It's sort of a set of ideas or a framework that we bring to what we're doing.
What is that framework?
So I think the primary piece of it would be the idea that there's an unconscious, that there's things that we do that we're not entirely aware of, that may be outside of our awareness. And this happens for everyone. There are times that you think you're making a decision that's very different from decisions you've made in the past, maybe a relationship, and you find yourself choosing someone that may be similar to the types of people you've chosen in the past, even if on the surface initially it seemed like you were doing exactly the opposite of that. So one of those is the idea of the unconscious. The idea that our past does inform our present, that some of what happened to us earlier in life, whether in childhood or, you know, even just, again, past relationships are going to be perhaps played out in our current relationships or our current endeavors in some way. And then I think the last piece is transference. It's the idea that people come into the therapy relationship and what happens between a patient and a therapist is based in that actual real relationship, but there may be something that the patient is bringing in from other relationships, earlier relationships that get played out in the therapy room. And I think a more contemporary understanding would bring in countertransference as well, which is that the therapist is a person. You know, we bring our own sort of ideas and biases and our own pasts into these relationships as well. And it's possible those pieces are sort of getting played out. So it's a complicated thing going on.
It is complicated. You have spoken about something called the relational turn.
Yes.
What is the relational turn?
So I think the relational approach is sort of just the idea that the relationships are what are at the center of our lives. So those relationships with family, with friends, with coworkers, and with our therapist. And that is sort of what drives and motivates us, not so much kind of internal conflicts about our, give me some help here, Dan, in terms of a more classical conceptualization.
Like Oedipal conflicts or castration anxiety or things like that.
Yeah, so it's just, again, this emphasis on relationships, that that's what's important, that that's what drives us, and that that's the area that we can sort of work through some of our difficulties.
So you have a private practice now. So who seeks you out, and what are they expecting?
So it's a range of different kinds of people, ages, difficulties, concerns. I see teachers, people in education. I see other healthcare providers. I have some government employees, people in business, people in tech. I have some folks who are in the arts. And, you know, people come in with a range of issues from, you know, I'm struggling with my relationship or parenting issues to, you know, I have a major mental illness that's chronic, bipolar disorder, depression, anxiety that I need help managing. You know, I work with folks who've had a trauma history that continues to have some impact in their lives. That's where I would say our past can continue to impact our present. It's a whole range. And I think the thing that sort of unifies this is the way that I'm thinking about them and trying to understand beyond the surface what might be going on. And that's what I would think of as sort of the psychoanalytic approach.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Dan Buccino, a social worker who's clinical supervisor in the community psychiatry program at Johns Hopkins Bayview, and Teresa Mendez, a social worker and therapist in private practice. We're talking about the role social workers play in psychoanalysis and mental health care. Dan Buccino, you assert that Baltimore is the birthplace of psychoanalysis in the U.S. How so?
Well, it's because I read the plaque on the Stafford Hotel at Mount Vernon Square, which confirms that Baltimore is the birthplace of psychoanalysis here. It says on May the 9th, 1911, the American Psychoanalytic Association was established here at the Stafford Hotel on Mount Vernon Square. Present at creation was Freud's main emissary, Ernest Jones. Probably it was founded here in Baltimore because Adolf Meyer, who was then the chairman of the Department of Psychiatry, was a great luminary in the mental health field at the time. And at the time, Freudian psychoanalysis would have been seen as sort of the leading edge evidence-based practice. Meyer was never completely committed to psychoanalysis, but he was definitely intrigued by it and interested in it. I just think that's an interesting little footnote to Baltimore's intellectual history.
Okay, well, that's what I was wondering. Is it a footnote back in history, or does it say anything about Baltimore and psychoanalysis?
Well, you know, I think people think that The Wire represents Baltimore. People think that John Waters represents Baltimore. People think the Ravens or the Orioles represent Baltimore. And I just think that there's a lot of other things that have happened in Baltimore and that Baltimore has contributed to. One of them is the bringing together the people who founded the American Psychoanalytic Association, which remains, you know, one of the main frameworks for thinking about mental distress 100-some-odd years later. You know, some of the things that Teresa talked about, the relationship, lots of other models of therapy, sort of like cognitive behavioral therapy, will say things like in sort of a tossed off way, well, of course you have to establish a relationship with your patient, and then you do all of your cognitive behavioral techniques as if establishing a relationship with the patient is really so easy. Lots of things get evoked in our patients and in ourselves, so it helps to have a framework to think about what may be going on. Freud himself was very committed to working with marginalized populations. He, early on in his career, established a number of free clinics throughout Europe. He thought that everybody should have access to psychoanalytic treatments. And I think that social workers are really keeping up those values. You know, the social work profession in general is committed to working with marginalized, oppressed populations, is very committed to social justice. And most people don't realize it, but there's a strong commitment to that as well in psychoanalysis, going back to Freud himself. So, you know, those commitments were present at creation, and they seem to be more necessary than ever in a city like Baltimore that has struggled for many, many years.
You are collaborating on a panel with a title that I first assumed was poetry, quote, "The Unconscious is Like Baltimore in the Morning," end quote. What does that even mean?
That quote was made by a French psychoanalyst named Jacques Lacan, who came to Baltimore in 1966. Another important footnote in Baltimore's intellectual history. He came to a big conference at Johns Hopkins University where a lot of contemporary critical theorists first gathered, people like Jacques Derrida and other French theorists. And Lacan was here too, and he stayed at the Belvedere and apparently looking out of his hotel room one morning looking at was said to have been a neon Coca-Cola sign. He said that the unconscious is like Baltimore in the morning. And I think, you know, the unconscious is something that's hard to grasp. The unconscious is really where you can't think to think. So just when you think you've seen the unconscious or have an idea of what is coming up from the unconscious, it slips away. Just like the meaning of a poem is often elusive. I think that he was suggesting that the unconscious sort of occurs in kind of a threshold state. It comes and goes. We get glimpses of it momentarily, and then it fades away. I think in Baltimore, it also sort of can encapsulate some of the oscillations in this town and in this city's psyche between its sort of tender and tough side, between its swaggering, boastful, and more fearful sides, between its northern and southern elements, between its black and white communities.
And you connect Baltimore's psyche with the aftermath of Freddie Gray's death in police custody in 2015. What do you see in that that you can say is part of the city's psyche?
You know, I don't know that we can sort of speak for Baltimore in any kind of reductive way. I think part of this is it's so complicated. And I think this is true of the city. I think it's true of some of these racial dynamics. I think it's true of individuals, too. And I actually think this is one of the things that a psychoanalytic approach does well, is it's trying to sort of not just reduce an individual or reduce a city to just one thing, but, you know, kind of grapple with these complexities. And I think that's ultimately why this approach or this way of thinking can be so effective for people. It allows for a really sort of meaningful understanding of these different, as Dan says, these different oscillations or these complexities that we all carry and that this city certainly does carry. I'm hesitant to try to sort of reduce it in a way, which is probably why I'm drawn to a psychoanalytic approach.
So much of your description focuses on trauma. You write about, quote, an endless coerciveness of precaution, a hypervigilance that is the hallmark of trauma, close quote, being common in this city. Teresa Mendez, how does your training as a social worker lead you to address trauma?
I think one of the things that clinical social workers in particular are trained to do and sort of skilled at doing is understanding people in their context. So it's not just looking at the psychological underpinnings of whatever's happened to someone, but recognizing that these things happen in a society, in a context, in a city, in a place where there may be a number of different things sort of informing that trauma. And I think what I'm thinking about right now are things like racism. You know, we live in a society where people are experiencing these very real traumas, and to be able to recognize that there's a context for it, there's an external reality to it. It's not just something that's in someone's head, or it's not just a symptom, that there really is sort of this societal, cultural basis for this. And I think this is something other mental health disciplines are coming to, but I think social workers are trained in sort of this biopsychosocial spiritual approach, which is, you know, we're thinking about the biological, we're thinking about the psychological, but we're also thinking about the social and sort of the spiritual. And I think all of those things are necessary. I mean, they're necessary to sort of sit with someone who's experienced trauma, to sort of be able to be with someone in that kind of experience. But I think they're necessary to help someone feel understood and to just recognize, you know, the world that we're living in, some of these realities, that this isn't just happening in someone's head or in their mind.
Our previous mayor, Stephanie Rawlings Blake, declared Baltimore to be a trauma-informed city and has set out to train just about every city employee to be aware of the kinds of traumas that citizens in Baltimore have encountered and may be bringing to their encounters with city employees. So I think the sense of trauma as being pervasive on so many levels across so many citizens of Baltimore is very widely discerned. And I think one of the things about Baltimore, for all of its stereotypes, pro and con, I just think it reflects the fact that, you know, the world is full of suffering and trauma, but it's also full of the overcoming of it. And for all of the stories of trauma in Baltimore dating back to the founding of the American Psychoanalytic, it's also full of many, many stories of overcoming of it. There's many highlights of the civil rights movement, of course, that originate here in Baltimore.
Well, I hope you have a great conference. Thank you for telling us about it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Dan Buccino, assistant professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, is a clinical supervisor in the community psychiatry program at Johns Hopkins Bayview Medical Center. Teresa Mendez, a social worker and former journalist, worked at the retreat at Shepherd Pratt and is now a therapist in private practice. They're speaking today at the American Association for Psychoanalysis in Clinical Social Work. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. After a short break, a Stoop story about backbone. Stay tuned.